This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hi, this is Mary Grady with AvWeb, and today I'm talking with Robert Hackman. He's the Senior Director of Regulatory Affairs at AOPA, and we're going to talk about ELTs. There's a lot going on as far as transitioning to new technology, so he's going to give us an update on what it is that general aviation pilots really need to know. So, Rob, thanks for talking with us today.
Well, good morning, Mary. I'm looking forward to it.
So to start out, can you just give us sort of the recap on what the deal is right now with the 406 ELT situation?
Absolutely. In February 1st of 2009, the CuspisARSAT satellite system that monitors the ELT signals stopped monitoring the 121.5 megahertz frequency and is now only monitoring the 406 megahertz frequency, which is a bit newer technology than the older units. From a regulatory standpoint, the requirement to carry an ELT has not changed at all. The older 121.5 megahertz units still meet the regulatory requirement. There's absolutely nothing that requires pilots flying here in the U.S. to change to the newer units. From a practical standpoint, though, there are some benefits to the 406 units that pilots should be aware of, and some drawbacks to the older units that pilots should be aware of also, and then other technologies that I think pilots should also be considering to supplement either the old or the new technology. 121.5 frequency, while not being monitored by the satellites, is still monitored by overflying aircraft, the military, air traffic control facilities, those types of things. But if you think about it, without the satellites up there, it's pretty limited in where somebody might actually be able to pick up. But it is still legally allowed, and it still can be picked up. We always recommended that, in addition, if you're relying on that 121.5 to meet the regulatory requirement, that you should be utilizing other things out there in case of a potential off-field crash or landing. Those things being cell phones, flight following, utilizing flight plans, making sure other people on the ground know where you're going, especially if you're flying over non-populated areas, those types of things. Our position has always been that the pilot is in the best place to make a decision as to what equipment should be on their aircraft and what additional equipment they want to carry to supplement that that equipment. The 406 units, while not only being monitored by the satellites, in case of emergency, if they are linked to a GPS, have the ability to send very precise coordinates, which obviously aids in the search and rescue function. To give you an example of the two, a 121.5 signal, the search area may be miles, whereas with a 406 that is linked to a GPS, you may be down to square feet in some instances. So there's a pretty significant benefit there for folks. But the same drawbacks to both ELTs apply. How survivable are they in a crash scenario? How well do they activate? The signals can get blocked if the airplane is, you know, potentially upside down, or they can be destroyed if the airplane catches fire. So having something else once you're out of the airplane, such as a cell phone, such as a satellite phone, if you're really flying in remote areas, or having other folks out there looking for you sooner are just as critical for either unit.
Okay, so what would be the pros or cons of switching to a 406 ALT, you know, now?
Sure. Well, the pros obviously are you have the satellite monitoring. You have more precise if they go off, those types of things. The cons would be they are a bit more expensive. In some aircraft, you may be looking at, you know, new antenna, new wiring, some things like that. And the other con is with all ELTs is the potential that they may not get set off, or you may have false alarms or those types of things.
Oh, I see. Now, as I understand, there's also two different ways this can work. I guess you can have it set up so it will send the GPS data, which means you just need one satellite basically to get your signal, but some just give a general signal, which means then you need three satellites to triangulate your position. Is that right?
Well, the 406 units, if they are not GPS enabled, then correct. They have to triangulate in some way similar to what they used to do with the 121.5. The true benefit of the 406 is the one that's GPS enabled, which will then send your GPS coordinates at the same time. So, you know, the true benefit there would be to go with the GPS linked with the 406 unit.
Now, what about false alarms and reliability? Is that improving with the 406, or is that still, like you said, a problem with the technology?
Well, that's always an issue with any technology where you're relying on trying to measure an amount of impact. And what sets off a 406 versus what sets off a 121.5 are basically the same. You're trying to judge very carefully the difference between a hard landing and a soft crash, shall we say. So you still have the potential for this to go off. The benefit to the search and rescue community on that 406 is that along with the signal, the 406, if registered properly, then can be looked up in a database and a telephone number and contact information is available. So the search and rescue community can call the owner of that 406 if it's registered properly and determine, hey, your unit is going off. Is the airplane safe or has it in fact have the potential of going down? So the false alarm is still there. It's just a matter that it can be dealt with a little bit more effectively.
Okay, now I guess a lot of people, even if they have the newer ELTs, haven't registered them, and that's an important part, right, of the search and rescue procedure. So what's involved in the registration procedure that seems to be, stopping people from doing it?
That's a very good question, Mary, and you're absolutely correct. The registration of the 406 is a very, very critical component. Without that, as I just explained, the false alarm is very difficult for the search and rescue community to deal with. They have to go out and actually do a search function. The registration, actually, there's really nothing that makes it difficult. It's a website that you go on, that you fill out. It's very simple to do. I think the problem is with anything. It's just getting pilots, once they put it in the aircraft, to take the next step to actually register the unit themselves, whether that's education from the person who installs it to make sure they know how to do it, whether it's you're buying an aircraft and making sure that if you have a 406, you're changing the registration from the previous owner. It's just another step that we as pilots and everybody has a tendency to sometimes forget.
And what is that website? Where would people go to do that?
I'm sorry, Mary, I actually don't have that up. I'll look for it here real quick. While we're talking about that, though, I should point out that one of the other supplemental technologies that's out there are the handheld PLBs or even handheld ELTs that are out there that can be used. There's also some commercial services like Spot that can be very, very good supplements to any of these systems. They also have the benefit of being portable that you can go ahead and take them to other modes of transportation. You can use those in hiking and biking and boating, those things as well. But even those units that are now 406 need to be registered as well. The registration website is www.beaconregistration.noaa.gov, and that's where folks can go on and register any of their 406 units.
Oh, okay, great. And that, of course, is NOAA, NOAA.gov.
That's correct, yes.
Great. So how far away do you think we are from a point in time where, say, you know, this is no longer an issue and when people crash, they can be certain that a signal is emitted and a signal is heard and they're rescued in no time by people who have their exact location? Is that right over the hill or is that still a long way away?
Well, there's still some extremely remote locations in the United States that even if your signal gets out, can still take a little time for people to get to you and some things like that. So I think for the foreseeable future, it's best for pilots to rely on a number of different technologies to provide them with the best alternatives.
Okay. So that would include a personal locator beacon and flight following and all those other things you mentioned.
Sure, especially the more remote location you're flying over, you know, the more options you want to have available to you, as well as the potential of you may spend the night in some of these locations. So how prepared are you to be to do that?
Yeah, that's good advice, too, to be prepared with the gear you need in the airplane.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you, Rob. I know it's a busy day there for you, and I appreciate your time. Is there anything else you think our listeners need to know before we sign off here?
No, Mary, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. As always, you know, we encourage pilots to be as educated as they can on each of these things and take as many options and choose as many options as they want to be safe.
Okay, thanks a lot. Again, this was Mary Grady with AvWeb, and we're talking with Rob Hackman from AOPA. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine. For more on aviation safety, log on to www.aviationsafetymagazine.com.